following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. It's the Friday edition, and we're glad you could join us once again. Before we get started again, I want to remind you that just because we talk about certain tax strategies or discuss certain news along with some color commentary on current real estate or tax developments, perhaps we talk about investment opportunities in the sense of analyzing the math that's involved. Please don't run out and seek to execute without first consulting with your advisors, your existing advisors who are familiar with your unique facts and circumstances. And for those of you that don't have advisors, you're more than able to go to our website at baplannershow.com and complete our intake forms, at least the first one, where we can get a good overview of your unique facts and circumstances, and then we can assess whether we can sync up with your goals and objectives, whether it's tax planning, perhaps putting some entities in place like a family LLC or a grantor trust or other planning strategies that provide assorted protections and or benefits to your future. In any event, again, the website is baplannershow.com, and you know, once you complete the form or forms, you're next able to go to the schedule a call screen. That's at the call link next to the form link, and schedule a call where we'll spend some time with you to discuss your submission. We're going to talk about several things today. I started yesterday on the Thursday show. And for those of you that aren't aware, we have a Thursday 2 p.m. show at the moment. And then we come back again on Friday at 11. And then on Sunday at 7 a.m., we do our cybersecurity show. I have a cybersecurity / AI expert, Mr. AI Nguyen. And gentleman I've known for, it pains me to say it, for literally 40 years. And he's good. I've had people that listen in each week tell me they really like the change of pace. Not sure what that means, actually. But in any event, I do participate on Sunday. But Nguyen is a treat to understand things that, you know, you hear about in the news, the assorted hacks that we have to be aware of, how to protect against them, you know, how they happened in the case of exploding pagers and things like that, how they were able to pull it off. And it's crazy what's out there. Just, you know, you're so close to stepping on a minefield. It's something that I think you would do well to listen to. And I don't think, I need to check with Amy. I'm not sure we're putting any of those episodes up on our website. I'll ask her to go back and add. I think we've done that show now, I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks. And I personally learn something new each and every time, and I am amazed that that's the case, because I thought I stayed in the know on many of these topics, but man, it's hard to keep up. And in any event, let's see. So as I mentioned, I started yesterday discussing, I was on my way to discussing the Roth conversion or Roth contributions, both topics, when I brought us an update on the current national debt. And if, for those of you that listened, you know that I refer to the usdebtclock.org site routinely, because it's tracked in real time out there, and it's quite a sight in terms of the volume of data, the different real-time amounts or percentages or assorted data points. And if you're not familiar with that, it's something you might want to take a look at, and not only take a look at it, now keep referring to it. And there's three sites that I throw into that category. The usdebtclock.org is one, and then the Committee for a Responsible Fiscal Budget, I believe, is the name on that one. You can Google it. It's Maya McGinnis is the executive director, and she's interviewed on assorted stations. She's a nonpartisan, and in fact, that committee is made up of both either former Democrats and Republicans, or maybe there's some current ones, I forget. But bottom line is, they get it. They understand the disaster that we're currently headed towards if we don't quickly address the systemic policies that we currently buy into as a country to turn the train around, or at least slow it down. And I went into detail on the numbers yesterday, and I'm not going to repeat that. But if you take a look at that and just focus on that top left quadrant of that webpage, you may start feeling a little bit uneasy, or you may feel like most people, well, it's out of my hands. I can't do anything. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. You can do something. And we want to help you avoid getting run over by the train. And at least based on the rules as we know them today, we'll tell you how to avoid getting destroyed by the chain or the train. It's going to cost you a little bit of money now, but it's going to cost you a lot of bit of money if you wait. And for those of you that think tax rates are going to go down again, you know, I'm trying to think what else I've got that I can sell you, because I don't think that's going to happen. And I'm not suggesting that in the very near short term, there won't be an attempt. Well, there's going to be attempts to raise your taxes on the one hand, and that would be if the Harris crowd is successful next month on the election day. And then there's talk by the other side, that would be the Trump team, that we're going to have still another cut in taxes, or at least certain segments of income that's currently taxed might not be. And in fact, the Harris team is making some of the same noises. They're monkey see, monkey do type thoughts. You know, no, Mr. Trump led with no tax on tips, and it wasn't a week or two later that now Harris saw the light, and she too was promoting no tax on tips. And then the second big pool of money would be no tax on Social Security. And again, Harris has stepped up and said, well, maybe she feels the same way. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, like, you know, the two or three days ahead of the election. I got a feeling they'll raise the stakes if it were a poker game, and you'll see other goodies being tossed into the mix. Well, it's all fine, as Ron Paul said once back. I can't remember the year that there were 8 or 9 Republicans on the stage and on the debates, and you had Ron Paul and I believe George Bush Senior and a few others. I can't remember all the names, but after they described each of their pet project, and Paul was the last to answer that question, he looked at each one of them and recounted what they just said. Said, "Well, you know, gee, a strong military would be great. Healthcare for all would be awesome," and just went down the list of what each one had proffered, and said, "Well, I just got one question for you: how are we going to pay for it?" And that's the problem when you start talking about giveaways or tax cuts. When we're in the position we are, we've already borrowed, depending on which economists you want to listen to and assume their posture on the assumption set that gets deployed, we're anywhere from even the most conservative viewpoint, which I think you could call CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, because they're saying that we've just crossed the 100% of GDP line. And let me make sure you understand what I'm saying. Our GDP is gross domestic product. That would be like our gross sales, perhaps, if we were a country. And we have borrowed over 100% of that number, the cumulative debt. And the current fiscal 10-year outlook, which the CBO, again, who is supposed to be bipartisan, it's the impartial umpire or referee, I guess you might say, calls the balls and strikes for congressional legislation. They're projecting an average of $2.1 trillion deficits for each of the next 10 years. So add that 23, 24 trillion dollars to the existing 35, we will be at $55 trillion cumulative debt by 2034. And I forget what percentage of GDP that's projected to be, but it's, I don't know, it's a lot closer to possibly, 150%, maybe higher, which is going to be problematic, because at the same time that's happening, and I'm not sure we'll make it to the 10-year mark and still be borrowing enough to sustain those $2.1 trillion deficits, because we're in a position right now where by the year 2028 or 29, we will have eclipsed the last portion of the discretionary budget component. In other words, the amount of the federal budget that we still argue over, the biggest chunk of the federal budget, the annual federal budget, it's already determined that it's going to be spent a certain way. There's indexing that's in place. There's mandatory laws that have to be funded. And so we're really, each year when Congress debates about whether to give, $100 million to some museum or research facility, or, you know, the stuff that we argue about, that's a dwindling percentage. And it will be, like I say, roughly 2028, 2029, and we will have nothing to argue about, except maybe raising taxes at that point. And it's coming. It's the math involved. It's not political. It's political right now. We like to argue about, well, you know, the Democrats consistently say we got to tax the rich. They're not paying their fair share. And yet when you drill down and try to find out what their fair share, quote unquote, is, they can't tell you. And you know, that's a problem. And then the Republicans say, well, you know, we need to quit providing foreign aid to almost every country in the world. And I'm being a little facetious, but it's a lot of them. And it's going on right behind your back. Look at the $150 million we just sent to the Lebanese people. You know, it never ceases to amaze me how we're spending money on people that live in faraway lands, while our own people are told that after a hurricane, we don't have enough money to take care of you right now. $750 is what was offered to the folks in North Carolina or Florida, or I don't know which states were covered on that, but, you know, Ms. Harris thought she was the messenger bringing, you know, joy and happiness, I guess, to the people. And $750, you know, this is after somebody's had their whole life upended, their homes blown away. And at the same time, almost the same moment, we're sending $150 million to the people in Lebanon. That's a lot of money. And that could have paid for a lot of the devastation in Florida. And so now we've got a scenario where the Homeland Security Agency, Mayorkas, is saying, well, we need Congress to come back and do their job. And what he's really saying is, we need Congress to come back and borrow still millions or hundreds of millions, maybe billions, more dollars. And, you know, how about doing your job and trying to be more efficient in the way we operate instead of always pushing to go borrow more money? Let's throw more money at it and it'll be okay. It's like the border crisis. We just need, if we just pass that bill that had basically opened the floodgates through a different side door where we really would have seen no fewer immigrants or very few, and it provided more money to give away to more immigrants. It's crazy that they don't seem to understand we don't have the money. And it's going to be a painful reckoning in 2028 or 29 when we can no longer pay 100% of the interest on the debt. And that's when real problems occur. Depression, that's with a D. It's not whether there's a soft landing or a hard landing. That's actually an article I've got queued up to talk about later in the show. No, it's a depression, and it'll be the worst that we've ever experienced if what happens is what appears is going to happen, since we don't seem to get enough or have enough congressmen and women that understand the problem. Most Congress people are economically illiterate, and that's scary when you look at what's riding on their ability to move the train over to a different track. And I tell you, but in any event, we're going to talk more about this, and we're going to again explain the Roth and Roth conversion strategy. And if you're not doing that, if you have pre-tax retirement money, IRAs, most IRAs, we'll go into a little more detail on that, and most 401s, or many 401s, most 401s is a true statement. Most larger companies, for sure, have a Roth component. That's R-O-T-H component to those plans that can allow you to pay the tax that will be due ultimately. You can pay it now, and at the lowest tax rates in most of our lives. If you're my age, I'm 64, and until about 1963 or 64, more than a couple years where the rates were lower. But since then, God, that's a long time. I'm too old. But since then, right now we have the lowest tax rates in our lifetime. The tax rates are on sale. Take advantage of it. And if you're investing in real estate private partnership syndications like myself and most of our clients do, it's an alignment of the planets. It's such an incredible opportunity to reduce your tax cost to convert to Roth. Cut it in half in some cases. Whereas if you've got your funds still over at Charles Schwab or Fidelity or UBS, and you've got them in stocks, bonds, index funds, mutual funds, you're going to pay a much higher conversion tax because of the types of investments. They're marketable, they're liquid. You can log into your account and sell them today. You've got some voting capability in terms of policy. You've got professional management in most cases. We might argue over the quality of the professional management from company to company, but it's different when you're investing in private real estate partnerships. There's more potential risk factors, or there's risk factors that we get discounts for when we value fair market value, which is the measure that's used to calculate the Roth tax. But anyway, let's go ahead and take our first break, and we'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hello, my friends. Chris Salcedo here. Have you noticed how customer service is on the downhill slide? If you're dealing with a huge project that will impact the beauty and comfort of your home, don't you want a company that treats you like royalty? That's what they do at Gulf Coast Windows, your trusted home window replacement company. Jim Fiume is the owner of Gulf Coast Windows. His customer care has kept him in business going on 40 years now. It's what makes him different from the fly-by-night or massive corporate companies. Jim puts you, the customer, first. Gulf Coast Windows has a special offer for KSEB listeners. Pay no interest for 5 years and get an additional $150 off each window purchased. These high quality windows are gorgeous and are designed for our rugged Texas climate. Call 713-849-5454. That's 713-849-5454 and get the KSEB special for the entire month. Again, pay no interest for 5 years and get $150 off each window purchased. Just go to GulfCoastWindows.com. That's GulfCoastWindows.com. Tell them Chris Salcedo sent you.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I was working my way towards explaining what you can do to step out of the way of that tax train that's barreling down the tracks. And if you don't think there's a tax train coming, just take a look at the usdebtclock.org, or maybe read the David McKnight New York Times bestseller, Power of Zero. And he's got several others that we'll eventually work our way into discussing on the show. And it's a scenario that's developed over a number of years, but the train has been picking up speed dramatically in the last, 15 or so years. And I would tell you that back in 2008 or 9, when CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, released their study to Congress about what we would need to do to turn the train around, to fix the annual deficit problem. The suggestion was that if we increased our tax rates, tax brackets, tax rates, each one of them by 150%, that would be on the way to, it would be more than a Band-Aid, but it might not be enough, depending on if the borrowing continued to persist. And it has, and it's not only persisted, it's gone up dramatically. But now, 200% seems to be the target if we want to deal with fixing the deficit. And so, again, let's dial that back to your personal situation. So if you're paying, 20 or 30% now, you would be paying somewhere in the 40 to 60%. And that's a huge average. I mean, if you look at your progressive income tax system with your income, which is what we have here in America, focus on the incremental tax rate. In other words, what's your next dollar going to get taxed at? That's the rate that matters in terms of your planning. And, you work your way up to a certain bracket, and then everything over that amount is going to get taxed at that incremental tax rate. And so it's not so much the average. I know in our situation as CPAs and most software that the professionals use, and for that matter, I believe things like TurboTax shows it as well. And by the way, as an aside, since I mentioned TurboTax, I'm going to deviate from the message here just a minute. What an amazing tool TurboTax is. I just marvel. As a tax accountant, I look at that software. It's been a long time, but I have looked at it in the past, and it's just amazing what you can buy for so little money. Almost as amazing as that circular saw that Makita makes that I can go buy at Home Depot for when you think about the benefits of mass manufacturing and how that's dropped the price of technology. You think about the technology involved in that circular saw, and I'm telling you, it's at least as impressive as TurboTax, and you could go down the list. It's just you could look at automobiles, you could look at a lot of things. Of course, automobiles, they seem to be capturing top value for their, or top dollar for their value. I'm not so sure a Makita circular saw or TurboTax really does. I mean, those folks on both fronts are providing just an incredible value when you think about what went in to the history of that saw being mass produced, or that software being mass produced. And I would say on the software side, it's even more amazing, because software is kind of like a masterpiece, piece of art that's made, I forget the term, where it's mass produced. So like I could go to Costco or online Costco at one point. I don't know if they still have them, but you could buy some of the Van Gogh artwork or the assorted other, you know, historically significant artist. And it's a, I guess it's a lithograph, maybe it's a not the original, but it's of the original, and they're mass printed on a printing press or whatever is used these days. I'm not sure. I think I'm showing my age. I'm dating myself. But bottom line is, you know, the mass production of something like a Makita circular saw, that takes a factory. That takes, you know, some people somewhere in the mix. Whereas the artwork that I think people like Costco sell, or some of the books that folks like Amazon offer, they're produced on demand. What an amazing concept, where they don't have to hold inventory, procure inventory, endure the holding cost of inventory. But anyway, the point of this little diatribe is that no matter how cheap that software TurboTax becomes, or how skilled, and I understand AI is going to change everything. And for those of you that have started using it, as we have, it doesn't even produce results in most cases that you could call a first rev. No, it's a rev. And in many cases, it's got wrong or incorrect or just bad information. So I'm going to suggest to you that with or without AI, TurboTax does not make you a tax accountant any more than that Makita circular saw makes me a carpenter. And I've got a Makita I haven't used in 15 years now. Bought it overseas, and I remember we were trying to, you know, I'm going to use the term loosely, build something. I think we were just trying to put a deck in back of the house, and I almost cut my leg off. The saw came through the board a little bit faster than I thought and fell down. My hand came on down by my side, and I was within an inch or two of having that blade cut my leg in half vertically, not horizontally. And I backed up, I unplugged the Makita saw, and that's the last time that Nathan has ever touched a circular saw, and it will not happen again. That's when I decided it's best to pay professionals for what they do every day. And that's what I'm going to suggest to you. You folks that are using TurboTax, I'm not going to tell you don't buy it and don't use it. I'm just going to tell you, don't file the version that comes out of TurboTax, because the odds are you misunderstood one of the list of questions they put you through to tell you whether to turn left or right, and especially if you undertake real estate investing. The real estate rules, the passive activity loss limitation rules, are incredibly complicated, where many CPAs don't understand them. In fact, I'm going to say most CPAs don't understand them, and they end up, when you do the turn left, turn right question analysis that's in most software, you get to the wrong point, but there's no red light out there to say, hey, you just ran a red light. You didn't have a green or a yellow saying you could go. And it's times 10 when you get into the syndication reporting. You know, how do you analyze K-1s? How do you report the K-1s? How do you get the right result, the correct result is what I should say, that it feels as if as you go through over the years that you own these investments, that you're trying to catch a moving target, because the rules vary depending on the other activities results for the year. Whereas you might have been limited last year on this loss on a K-1, next year you get a piece of it, or you get all of it. And you got to track those carry forwards throughout the years. And so, again, I use, or I would suggest that if you want to use tax software and you're a layperson, use it to get an estimate throughout the year. If you're wrong on an estimate, it's probably not going to materially damage your outcomes, but it wouldn't be bad to run it by an accountant, a tax accountant at some point. And again, the idea is TurboTax will not make you a tax preparer or tax professional any more than that circular saw is going to turn probably you and me for sure, into a carpenter. Okay, so we were talking about, let's see, what were we talking about? It'll circle back to me in a moment. I'm at that point in life where it's like someone bumps your desk and your hard drive skips, and it'll return soon. I believe we were talking about the Roth strategy. And what I'm going to suggest to you, hold on just a second. Let me get a sip of liquid here. Been fighting a sore throat. In any event, the Roth is probably the most common way to sidestep tax in the future. And for those of you that are in your 50s or 60s, you may think, well, it's too late. Well, no, it's probably not. Because the IRS, believe it or not, assumes that you're going to live to the ripe old age of 85 to 86 if you're a male, and 87 to 88 if you're a female. Now, you think about the level of RMDs, those are required minimum distributions, that in the pre-tax world you're going to pay over the rest of your life. It's, in most cases, it's mandatory. And so, you know, and there are differences, obviously, between the Roth and the pre-tax, and that's why we want to run for the cover, run for the trees, if you will, and get protection against the tax on those RMDs. Because, as I mentioned, even if the tax rate stayed the same, you would be shocked at how much tax you're going to pay if you run those numbers out to those life expectancies. And when you figure the rates are likely to double, again, it's not Nathan, it's CBO, if you want to argue with the Congressional Budget Office, likely to double over the rest of your lifetime, think about how much you really have in that IRA, or you really have in that 401. And if you say, well, you know, I've got a couple million dollars, I'll be okay. Well, not if you're paying, you know, 40 to 60% income tax, or maybe not. I'm assuming not. I wouldn't want to wake up and find that I had less than half. And personally, I'm converting to Roth. I've got most of mine converted. And then I've got another variable in my life. I live in Southeast Asia, where it costs 30% living cost to enjoy what I enjoy in America. Think about that. That 70% would cover the tax if the rates were to somehow start to affect Roth distributions, which, you know, I can't guarantee you as we sit here today, when you understand the severity of the problem. I'm going to suggest to you that Roths, while they've always dodged any major tax legislation dealing with retirement funds, IRAs are far more affected in most cases than 401s. That's another reason to get to the 401, self-directed 401 trust strategy that we suggest. Not to mention, there's no leverage tax, and I'm using that term colloquially. The legal or technical term is unrelated debt financed income, UDFI is the acronym, which is part of the UBIT or UBIT acronym, unrelated business income tax, that applies to IRAs. So if you're invested in a multifamily or single family piece of real estate, that experiences a gain and you have leverage. Now, maybe if you bought it in your IRA, you weren't aware that you actually could have gotten a mortgage. You know, there are some lenders that will lend to IRAs on a non-recourse basis, which that's required. But in any event, an IRA and a self-directed 401 trust could be invested in the same partnership, two separate partner interests. You could have both types of funds invested, and the IRA is going to be subject to paying that UDFI tax if there's a gain or if there's taxable income in any interim year, which is unlikely the way depreciation works and the way partnership tax works. But it's unlikely if you sell it a gain, you're probably then going to be exposed to the UDFI tax unless you time the gain with maybe a new investment that generates significant tax benefits or tax deductions, which is what we work with clients on trying to do if they cannot qualify to participate in the self-directed 401. But in any event, the beauty about pairing investments in real estate private syndications with Roth conversions is that we get, as I mentioned earlier, significant discounts, lack of marketability, lack of majority control, lack of professional management, and I mean that in the technical sense. You know, when you look at a company like Apple and the extensive executive suite that runs that company, you really don't have that in most cases. I mean, there are some exceptions, but most cases you're dealing with, I'm going to say mom and pop in a loving way. There's a lot of mom and pops out there that are leading partnerships and making good money for their partners. There's nothing wrong. In fact, I'm going to tell you, I prefer a savvy mom and pop to the overhead that's associated with the larger, let's call it flatter organizations, where they've got more chefs in the kitchen, perhaps, than the mom and pops are willing to do. And I would tell you, if you find a mom and pop that's making money, you know, ride with them. You know, let's find somebody at that level, or let's do our own small apartment building. I've got an 8-unit that I own with a business partner, which is one partner. And then I'm an investor in a 600 unit or 700 unit property. And then I'm invested in a portfolio of a dozen properties across the Southeast U.S. So I've seen it at all sizes. And I've also reviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of private placement memorandums for transactions of all sizes. And I'm going to tell you, there's a definite argument for saying, hey, I'm not going to pay the fees. And if you think the fees are a small thing, I'm going to tell you that if you put $100,000 into a large transaction, you will be pleased at some point. You won't be at first when you figure out that about half of that or more in some cases ends up in the sponsor, syndicator, lead partner, whatever you want to call that role, ends up in their pocket or pockets if they have a team. And when you think about that, that means you've got to hit a grand slam to get a double or single. Whereas if you buy a small apartment building on your own, you can pay a management company. And in fact, if you're doing this with retirement money, you should pay a management company because you are a party in interest and you can very easily stub your toe when it comes to the prohibited transaction rules, which you will not like the outcome of that were you to be scrutinized and determined to have breached the prohibited transaction rules. But in any event, you know, we like all types of options when we come to the investment analysis for multifamily. The one common thread is multifamily. We strongly recommend multifamily over single family rentals unless you're just getting started and you only have the money to take down a single family rental. Okay, that's better than sitting on the sidelines and waiting. And at some point, if you're successful, you'll be able to either acquire several more single family rentals or hopefully make a move over into multifamily, again, maybe on your own. And if you do it on your own, you've got the potential for executing a 1031 or tax-free exchange to get into that small apartment building. And so, you know, if you're already thinking along these lines and thinking it may make sense for you, please connect with us or whoever, somebody that understands this niche of investing. And don't come to me if you want me to help you analyze stocks and bonds. That's not my forte. It's analyzing complex real estate private partnership syndications and understanding what that stack of paper that you're going to be given to review on the front end means and how you can avoid the tax. So let's move on. We've got about 5 minutes left with the Roth conversion. And essentially, the ability to convert over to Roth involves, I'm going to leave the first spot available for a moment. Let's go to step two, and then we'll come back to step one. Step two is we calculate what we believe a fair market value is for each one of the investments held by the Roth 401, and the key word there is market in the fair market value definition. And market means what would a unrelated willing buyer pay you as a willing seller for an asset where both of you have all the same information. There's no secret or unfair advantage that you might hold or the buyer might hold. Now, that's not to say that the buyer might see a higher and better use of that asset. So that wouldn't be something that was contemplated in the term fair market value. Let's just assume that if the buyer doesn't see a better use of the property, it won't be worth as much to the buyer as it would be otherwise. But bottom line, what's the amount that a willing buyer will pay a willing seller where both parties know all the facts and circumstances? And in the multifamily world, if you have a chance to look at a private placement memorandum for a private partnership transaction, you will see in every one, or at least every one that's offered under the 506 crowdfunding statute, section 506, because there are mandated disclosures for certain of those offerings, the 506B category, which is a category that the non-accredited investor who's sophisticated, meaning they have a certain level of real estate knowledge, can participate in. And that list of 20 to 25 risk factors will explain, and those, by the way, are not necessarily voluntary disclosures. Those are mandated, again, by SEC rules. And unfortunately, there's not much scrutiny that takes place after that by SEC unless somebody pops up with a complaint. It'd be nice if we had some regulation to confirm that the syndicator's doing what they said they would. But in any event, if you look at those risk factors, that's what colors our valuation work, if you will, where we decide, well, you know, we've got a discount of X for this, discount of X, you know, minus two for that, and we come up with a value. So we end up significantly less than the value that security. It is a security, but the value that that interest was acquired for, or it could be more. Depends on, you know, are we on the doorstep to a sell or a refinance? So typically you want to do the valuation and the conversion as the property is, you know, originally acquired, before you've, you know, gotten to its best state. Now that doesn't mean there's still not discounts. There are going to be discounts, period, because of the lack of marketability and the lack of majority control. You may not even be able to vote at all in a real estate private partnership syndication. There's many of the top brand and not top brand syndicators that don't allow any vote by the passive partners. And again, remember, you're not having to find the property. You don't have to find investors. You don't have to find the lender and go on the hook in some measure, whether it's recourse or non-recourse, on the debt. You don't have to get the property leased up. There's a lot of things you don't have to do as a passive investor. In fact, there's very little you do once you give them the money. But giving them the money is a big deal. And I can't stand it when I see syndicators act like, well, I deserve all these upfront fees because I'm going out and finding the property, I'm putting the deal together, blah, 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 blah. And my response is, well, that's what you're getting the 20 to 40% promote. Think of it as an override on each deal. The other fees are, in my mind, unfair. And we call it out and we try to help you negotiate clawbacks if you're getting a big enough position in a deal. Because in this day and time, there's been enough deals go south that I'm going to suggest to you, you don't invest if you can't get comfortable that that syndicator has adequate funds, either in the deal or on a balance sheet, preferably on a balance sheet, that he can call back if things go south. So I just got a couple minutes left here. So when we value the assets of the partnership or your interest in the partnership, then that tax year you add that much value to your 1040, and you pay the tax associated with the conversion. And then from that point on, those funds are given Roth treatment where you don't pay tax, assuming it's qualified, you've had the Roth account or a Roth account open for 5 years. It could be a Roth IRA, because we can always roll over from the Roth to the Roth IRA. And in any event, that's essentially the life of the Roth conversion, at least up until the point you start taking money out. But even then, if it's qualified, you're not paying tax. And 0% times whatever you are distributing is zero tax. So we're coming up to the end here. We've got a few seconds left. If you want to learn more about what we've discussed, again, go to our website at baplannershow.com. Fill out an intake form, or if it's just a quick question, fill out the call request, and I'll be happy to spend some time on the phone with you and see if we can help answer a question. We, again, enjoyed the show today. We thank you for listening. We'll see you or hear you Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on KSEV AM 700. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.